This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 6. Welcome to iFanboy Media Splode, episode 6. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I am here with Josh Flanagan.
I am Josh Flanagan. Hello, Connor.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
And iFanboy Media Splode is the monthly show in which you talk about things other than comic books. It was unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/iFanboy. We like all things, and we like to talk about them. So we usually start off with some quarantine streaming talk, but we also should talk a little bit about what we're missing in the world. Before, because we always end up talking about TV because there's nothing else to talk about.
What the world needs now is love.
There's really only TV love to talk about. There's no movies to go to. We can't go to the movies. We can't see Tenant. We can't see anything.
I so wish we can go to the movies. It was funny because earlier today, in fact, Josh and I were chatting and we're talking about music and we're talking about missing going to shows and seeing bands play. And I didn't type this, Josh, when we were talking in Slack about it, but the thought did cross my mind that if someone came to me today and like, you can go to this venue and see these three bands, or you can go to a movie and you're in no danger of COVID or anything like that, but you can only choose one. I honestly don't know what I would pick. I love live music, but I love the movie theater experience.
Well, but like, do you want to watch, like, if the show was really good, yeah, you know, but the movie was just kind of okay, then you go, I'd kind of be okay with watching it.
I feel like in this scenario, it is of equal level bands that you would really enjoy and a movie you would really enjoy. Because listen, I'm not risking this wish on like, I'm not sure. I heard mixed things about that movie, or like, I don't know, sure, the opener, you know, like.
No, I think, yeah, but like if it was like, it's an okay movie, but the popcorn's very fresh and the band's good, but you've seen them a couple times, I'd go with the movie.
Air conditioning.
I haven't gotten popcorn at the movie theater in years because I read an article, it must have been like 10 years ago, that apparently the large tub of popcorn is the equivalent of eating like 12 Big Macs or something like that. And I was like,
I know.
And like, I literally was like, oh, I'm never doing that again. So
I know. I love movie popcorn so much. Ugh. It's a thing.
There's a question for you. Connor, what is your movie theater snack?
Usually something chocolate.
Interesting. Like what? You mix it up or do you have one thing? What do you do?
It really just depends on where I'm going, what they have.
One time I got him Buncha Crunch and he said Buncha Crunch and I had no idea what he was talking about. This was like 15 years ago.
Those are the little Nestle Crunch nuggets,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I usually get that if they have nothing else, but like...
Interesting.
There's a theater here in LA that I used to go to all the time before those movies called The Landmark, and they used to have like a local bakery made brownies for them, and it was like the best brownie I've ever had, and I would get brownies and a tea. Mm-hmm. And that would be like my ultimate.
You know what's sad?
And then they stopped doing the brownies, and I would complain to the manager. And I never do that.
Can you see him? He brushes his hair over sideways. Excuse me.
That bakery's probably out of business.
Sure.
Probably not. But I was like, can you give me the name of the bakery? Like, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's usually what I get. It's something chocolatey, and
yeah.
I try not to get a sugar drink.
Never get a drink. Oh, never get. I'm a Raisinets guy.
I like Raisinets, actually.
A good box of Raisinets during a movie, man. There's nothing better.
I don't usually get candy. Candy's like if I'm like, fuck it, we're making a day of this. But I will usually get popcorn, and I will get a massive soda from the thing.
Are you trying to kill yourself?
Yes. I mean, clearly. Yes. But like I have the Stubbs Premier, whatever, so they upgrade, like all your drinks and whatever just gets made large automatically. And then... You know, so I'm like, okay. They have the cherry vanilla Dr. Pibb, Mr. Pibb. That's the only place you can get it. Like, and they've shut down all those freestyle machines everywhere. You can't use them anywhere. So they just have, you know, like, it's just, even when I was like, I quit soda completely, which I've tried to do a bunch of times, like a cigarette smoker. When I'd go to the movies, I was like, no, it's okay here. Because that is part of it. But so I got like I got an email from AMC because I just said I was one of those Stubbs people, which has worked out really well for me because my theater is really cheap, so my rewards go a long way. And it was saying, you know, like they like, please come back. We're going to be safe. We got filtration. There's social distancing. There's plastic. There's whatever it is. We clean everything all the time. And I was like, you're making a pretty good argument. And I'm a hardliner with social distancing. Like, I haven't done shit.
All those theaters are doing that now. It's on the Alamo website, and they have their whole big welcome back, and it's everything that how it's going to work and when they return to theaters. They need listen. These theaters need to open.
Yeah,
it's a problem.
And I get that too. I have a great little theater here. And I'm sure it was on the verge of collapse before, but it's moments from my house. It's cheap as shit. Like, I don't want them to go.
What's interesting is that, like, I want to say, like, in May or June, maybe, I got an email because I my preferred theater chain here in New York City is Alamo. There's one in Brooklyn. It's a short subway right away. And I just can't deal. I mean, like, it makes sense, Josh, that you have an AMC, but, like, AMCs in New York City are, like, that's
oh,
your.
Sure.
Yeah, all. It's just
no,
like,
I mean, but on a given night, I could go to. If I go on, like, a weeknight, there's nobody in there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's fine. But at Alamo here in New York, the strict, like, no phones, no talking, like that, need that.
I totally get it. I used to go in Queens, and every time it was like, all right, here we go. You remember we all went and saw Borat in Queens, and it was
it's like a frat party.
Well, the last time I went to a movie at an AMC in Manhattan, I think it was Trainspotting 2, and like half the theater was on their phone the whole time, and it was like, oh,
no, God. I remember that Borat when people were like, took calls. It wasn't just looking at it. It was like, yeah, hello? Nah, I'm in a movie.
But so I got an email from Alamo with like, please take a survey about returning to the movies. And it was all the, and like, they were very thoughtful questions about like, would you be comfortable doing this? And like, what if you had to order, you couldn't buy tickets at the box office. You can only pay tickets in advance. Or what if you had to buy tickets and an entree? Like because they're trying to figure out how can we stay afloat if there are less people in the theater. But it was really kind of thoughtful in terms of their approach. And so I'm curious when they open, what they do and how they do it. But it's just, I miss the movie so much.
The fact of the matter is for a really big movie, I want to be in a theater.
Yeah.
Everyone's got great TVs and they got good sound. But my TV isn't really nice and I got good sound. But like, I want to see like Star Wars in a theater. I want to see Marvel movies in a theater. Yeah. I want to see big, epic, well shot Christopher Nolan movies in a theater. I don't want to see them at home for the first
time. Well, aside from that, I have a huge, I mean, like I was talking about this to some folks at work. Like I believe the theater going experience, again, it's like you said, Connor, you can all get home theater equipment, you can get speakers, you get a big TV, all stuff like that. Nothing replaces the idea of going somewhere and going into the theater and like this experience is catered to this exact thing. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how good your home theater is at home, it's not going to match, you know, movie theater cinema quality. And then also like it is far too easy to be distracted at home.
Yes, that's
even if I didn't go to Alamo, you know, take your phone out during the movie, and like when you're at home, I'm gonna check my phone, I'm kind of bored, you know, or like, oh, I've got to fold that laundry.
Who's that guy?
Or someone knocks on the door, something happens. Yeah, exactly. And in a movie theater, you don't do that. You are focused on just watching and enjoying, and I think that's important.
Also, there's nothing better than being in a comedy when everyone in the theater is laughing at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You know, not to harp on a thing, but like, it's very similar to why I think I like records. Like, yeah. I have to intentionally listen to something. Like, I have to go through a whole, I have to not touch the record. I have to be there because in 15 minutes, I'm going to have to flip it over. Like, it's just more active and so much is, you know, passive background. I mean, half of what we're going to talk about, you know, if we talk about what we're watching, I tend to do in the background. So, yeah, no, you're totally right.
Yep.
Well, let's jump in then with the first segment. We'd like to start with what we've been quarantine streaming since the last episode. It's usually streaming because what else have we got to do? But really, it could be anything you've been enjoying since we've last discussed things. And I'll start it off because Ron gets snippy when I start off with him.
I just wasn't prepared. That's all.
I understand. So in my house, what we've been doing during quarantine is we've been alternating picks. So I pick a show, she picks a show, I pick a show.
I'm afraid you might fold under questioning, Ron.
And so this past month, it was her pick, and we watched Sex and the City on HBO Max, which I've seen a couple of episodes of, but never really watched. But
I'm sorry, Connor.
The thing is, I really enjoyed it. It was funny. The first season, they're not really sure what the show is, but by season two, it really sort of gets going. And also, first of all, it's full of guest stars. There's a great Kyle MacLachlan storyline in it.
True. I mean, yeah, they did have good casting.
It's also from that time period where, like, all the, you know, people that they would have had on the guest, the supporting people, they would have all been nobody at the time. And then you'd be like, oh, it's that guy. You know, like
Bradley Cooper, one of his first roles is in the show.
I love watching movies from like the late 90s. And all of a sudden, you know, all the actors in it because they all got a career after that.
Yeah. And the thing is, for me, it's very nostalgic because it takes place late 90s, early 2000s. It's in that period.
Starts about the same time as The Sopranos.
Because around the midpoint is when 9/11 happened. So it's around, late 90s, early 2000s. That's when I graduated college, was living in New York, was single, was going out all the time. So
it's of the time, right?
Very of the time. You know, no one's got phones. The hot areas in town, where we were going out after work. Like, all that stuff was very familiar.
That was the meatpacking district, right?
Meatpacking district. Bars there, and that's a whole storyline, too. Like, it felt very... You know, one of the characters lived in the Upper West Side. That's where I grew up. There's a whole story about one character moving to Brooklyn and how traumatic that is. And I remember, you know, I grew up in Manhattan. Someone went to the outer boroughs. It was like, you know, goodbye, and I'll never see you again kind of thing. And the idea of living and going out and having relationships at a time where you weren't constantly on your phone, you couldn't text each other, you left people messages in machines. Like, it was a very familiar and sort of, I don't want to say comfortable, but I felt very fun watching that aspect of it. But it was also very funny and well-written. And
now, Megan had seen it before, presumably.
Yeah. Okay. Huge fan. I liked it. It was fun. But other than that, I haven't really streamed anything else. But what I have found myself doing is that since lockdown, which was late March-ish, I've probably watched Unstoppable like 8 or 9 times.
Good choice.
Unstoppable, the Tony Scott directed, Denzel Washington, Chris Pine, Rosario Dawson.
That's a good movie.
It's almost like the perfect action movie.
I'd say I put that in my disaster film genre.
Yeah, it's that disaster / action. There's not like a ton of action, but I was actually thinking that today because I watched it today and I watched it yesterday. It's on HBO rotation right now and it just happens to be on. I need something in the background while I'm working. It's the perfect sort of background accompaniment because you can come in at any point. You come in early, you get the whole arc, but you can come in late. There's a lot of different arcs in the story.
Oh, so this isn't your choosing to watch it. It just happens to be like you, because you have satellite, right?
I'm just constantly seeing what's on and I can put in the background. It's not too distracting, but enough where I can like sort of peek around my monitor for a few minutes.
We're talking about a missile.
The size of the Chrysler building.
And it's headed right at us.
If you haven't seen this movie, it's loosely based on a true incident that happened where a runaway freight train in southern Pennsylvania had to be chased down because it was going to end up going off the tracks and causing a disaster. And so Denzel Washington is the train driver and Chris Pine is the newly minted conductor. They have to chase this train down because they're the only ones that can stop it. And it's exciting. It's fun. It's funny.
Who's the actor who plays the guy? He's at the diner and he's supposed to...
I don't know, but I love that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
He's the head welder who helps saving the day.
Yeah, and he's got the cowboy hat and... It's a perfect movie. It's even more perfect. It's a perfect trailer. Like, you could go, Lindsay and I will, not all the time, but we'll sometimes just pull up the Unstoppable trailer and watch it because it's just like the best textbook trailer for an action movie ever. There's, you know, oh, it's so good.
Whenever there's, you know, I need a film and I see Denzel Washington movie, I've watched a lot of them over the break. I've watched Manchurian Candidate and Training Day and there's like 5 or 6.
I'm not doing it for you. Not for you.
That's a great line reading.
Oh, everything He's the best. We're very pro Denzel home here. We will do the same thing. We'll be like, we should watch a Denzel movie. Which one? I don't know. Let's figure it out. Like,
it doesn't matter.
A lot.
Because it doesn't matter how bad the movie is, and sometimes they're bad, he's great. He's incapable of being bad. So that's what I've been doing, watching Sex and the City, 6 seasons and about 9 times Unstoppable.
I think at the end of March, I started watching Malcolm X, and I got about halfway through it, and then my work day was over, and I had to go back and do whatever, because that's what I do. I put stuff on during work. And then next day, I came off, and they had taken it off of whatever service it was, and I didn't get to see the end of it.
That's funny.
Yeah, I got Denzel Blue Balls. It was no good.
So Josh, Blue Balls Flanagan, why don't you go?
Wow.
Let's see. I was going to talk about the Rob Lowe book memoir that Connor sent me. I realized that I'm going to have to save some of this for the year-end show.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. So I will go over a couple things. It's funny because, Ron, you have been telling us lately, like, there's nothing to watch, which, you know, I'm not arguing with you, but I think that's absurd. If anything, there's too much to watch, and that makes it feel like there's nothing to watch, but there's not nothing.
Not a drop the tree.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, like, there's too much to watch, but a lot of the stuff that's out, like, I'm not going to watch Yellowstone on Peacock. Like, I don't, just because it's out there doesn't mean I have to watch it. And actually, it was very funny because I did complain about there not being anything to watch, and Matt Rosenberg actually called me out on it. And he's like, he's like, that's ridiculous. Can I recommend you some things? I said, sure. And he sent me a list of stuff, and half of them I'd already seen. And the other half are like horror films and stuff that I'm not into that genre. So I was proud of myself in that regard.
I'm pretty sure though there's stuff that you've not considered watching that you would like, but you put it on your do not call list.
I actually started watching the first couple episodes of Mythic Quest based on your guys' recommendation on this very show, and I'm enjoying it. So there you go.
Wow, I don't think you've ever actually taken one of my recommendations before, so that's cool.
Well, Connor also recommended it. So
yeah, exactly.
Carried more weight.
Exactly.
And what's great about Mythic Quest is the same thing that's great about Sex and the City is it's a half an hour.
Magic number. 30 minutes is the perfect TV time.
Agreed. I remember when The Mandalorian first came out, we were all like, this is great. But Ron goes, you know what's really great about it?
Right? Exactly.
It was 35 minutes in and out. And
was I wrong?
It was a long end credit sequence. Yeah. So you could just
the
be
thing
done
is
with
that
it,
the prestige era of TV, it's all about, you know, pushing the envelope, going an hour 15, going an hour 5, going an hour 10, pushing
brutal.
The envelope on a feature length episode.
Yeah,
but sometimes 30 minutes is the perfect time frame for a story.
It's exactly what you need. Sometimes you can even get 2 episodes in, and then you feel like you got ahead of things.
Yeah. Yep. Well, if you're doing one at a time, it's going to take a while. Anyway, so you know how you've got we've all got a queue. I have a queue on. I've got a Hulu queue. I've got a Netflix queue. I've got one on there. Is there an app, by the way, that sort of brings your queues together so you can see all the things that you save to watch later?
There's a bunch of apps that do that.
I should do that.
Yeah, like the TV tracking type things to say, I'm going to watch this later. I've watched and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
There's an app called Hobi that does it, H-O-B-I. Okay. There's a ton that do that.
Interesting. Okay. It'd be great if I said that and you went, God, there isn't one. We got to get on this.
Oh, no.
Stop
anyway,
the show.
Anyway, so... I'm flipping around on Hulu. Like, basically, at this point, I do just like, I'm like, I don't know what I want. So I'll just open up one of the random things. And I saw on my list on Hulu, at some point, I had put the FX show Trust on there. And Trust is the J. Paul Getty, the third kidnap story. There was also a movie called All the Money in the World, which famously replaced Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer. And it was okay. It was fine. And I had put this show on my Hulu, and I thought, I probably would like that. And then I never thought about it again. I think largely because I did not like the screen grab, which is the kid, and he's painted all funny, and it's weird. It's like a David Bowie album or something. So I threw it on the other day, just because, like, I'll try this. And I do this a lot. I'll throw something on, and then, like, I realize it's over. I didn't really pay attention to it, and I move along. But it hooked me real fast.
Well, this is Danny Boyle. He
executive
produced it. He directed the first 3 episodes, I think.
Something like that.
I watched it when it was on. It was good.
If he didn't direct them all, then, you know, he was guiding it. He was definitely telling
them what to do. Well, he set the tone and the style, which they then aped for the rest of the series.
Yeah, and it's a real good show. There's a killer cast. You've got Donald Sutherland as John Paul Getty Sr. I don't know who the kid is who plays the third, but he's fantastic.
Yep.
Great casting. You've got Hilary Swank. You have a star turn by Brendan Fraser. It's all this period stuff. It's in the early 70s, and it's in Italy largely. It's a hell of a show. I don't know where they got the music budget for this show,
it's pretty
big. Like they are it's like Pink Floyd, the Rolling Stones. I was like, Jesus, how are they paying for this?
I thought the Italian side of it was the most interesting. Like Donald Sutherland's great and Brendan Fraser's terrific, but the whole side of the kidnappers and how that plot unfolded and how it was a mess and how it all went bad, was really great.
Yeah. So if you saw that other movie and you thought, oh, I've got that covered, this is much better than that.
Well, it's like 6 more hours in the movie.
Yeah, but that's not always a good thing.
Oh, you get to go more in depth in all the characters and the side stories.
And Brendan Fraser is a very different character than Mark Wahlberg played in the movie, largely because Brendan Fraser wasn't playing Mark Wahlberg. it's a great show. I had Lindsay, I was like, you should see this. This is really fantastic. And so she's been watching. She goes, you know, like, this is a good show. So that's awesome. The one other thing that I sort of watched by chance one day was I watched The Banker. On Apple TV Plus, Anthony Mackie and Sam Jackson, and basically it's a story about, I want to say, the late 50s, early 60s in Los Angeles. Basically, a black entrepreneur, you know, tries to buy real estate, but he finds out he can't, and so they come up with this scheme, not really a scheme, but just a way that they have a white guy played by Nicholas Holt front for them, so they can buy, you know, real estate and sort of own things in a time when they weren't really allowed to do that. And it was a great movie. It was really interesting from a social standpoint. It is hands down the best Sam Jackson I have seen in a Sam Jackson role in a long time.
Hmm.
It reminds you that when he wants to, he can turn it on.
Oh, it was 100% still there. There wasn't a thing where, like, you know, it was fun watching him in Captain Marvel and all that, but like, this was Sam Jackson.
It wasn't fun to watch him run.
No, but it wasn't fun to watch Robert De Niro punch somebody in The Irishman. So it's sort of like that. But no, super quality Sam Jackson, really good supporting cast.
I didn't have a problem with the punching in The Irishman. It was the kicking.
Yeah,
whatever.
It was just so stiff. It was anyway. So
yeah, really enjoyable. It sort of surprised me one day, and you know, I just sort of threw it on, and then I was like, oh, I'm hooked, and I always like that feeling.
Ron.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I checked out Mythic Quest. We're a few episodes in, enjoying it. It's amusing. 30 minutes, that's awesome. Another 30-minute show, you head over to Disney Plus, and you could check out Muppets Now, which is the return of the new Muppets content. It's basically half an hour of a series of sketches for all intents and purposes. It is various sketches.
I love how, like, controversial the Muppet Show always is.
Always is.
No matter what the show is or the film or whatever, there's going to be one side that hates it and one side that loves it.
I'll be honest with you, and again, these are, you know, these opinions are my own and do not reflect the Walt Disney Company, so I want to be clear about that. As a longtime Muppet fan,
I can confirm that. He is.
It really stems from, and I think the best person that put it was Frank Oz, who, if you know your Muppets lore, you know Frank Oz, who not only was the puppeteer and the voice of Yoda in the Star Wars films, but is also the puppeteer and the voice of Muppets such as Fozzie Bear.
Miss Piggy.
Bert, I believe, Bert and Ernie. Frank Oz says, as much as Disney loves the Muppets and wants the best for the Muppets, and they truly believe they can do it, they don't get it. And that's that. Ever since Jim Henson passed away, that has been the problem, because the issue with the Muppets is that ever since Jim Henson passed away and the Muppets went into kind of, you know, first with, you know, Henson Productions and then Disney got involved and stuff like that, it got turned into this regurgitating cycle of pairing the Muppets with celebrities and watching everyone react.
It's the Muppet movie over and over again.
Well, right, except that the Muppet movie was done by Henson and had celebrities, but the celebrities weren't the primary focus. The Muppets were always the primary focus. Mm-hmm. And so much of this comes from the writing and from the approach to the Muppets and the general vibe to it. And under Henson, it was clever, it was satirical.
It was subversive.
It was subversive, yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, recent Muppets, you know, and by recent, I mean dating back to the mid-90s, have been anything but that. They've been very safe. It's been very just like, hey, look, we're the Muppets, and you know, you love us, and
like, did you like the movie?
I did. Well, so there are two modern movies.
The Jason Segel one,
and then there was the sequel to it. The Jason Segel one came really close. I liked it a lot. I did enjoy it. It was funny. It got a little too hokey, you know, like a little too, like there are points at it where it got a little too kind of precious and proud of itself. Mm-hmm. The second movie was, it just went right back to the old formula where it's like, here's a contrived plot. We're going to throw celebrities in and hey, look, it's Ricky Gervais and the Muppets and Ray Liotta and the Muppets and Tina Fey and the Muppets. And it just made, you know, like acting in a Muppet movie is the equivalent of like you hear the actor saying, well, my kids, you know, told me I had to do it,
right.
You know, like that sort of thing. And which is, you know, which is
hey,
just,
that
you know,
worked out for us with Lord of the Rings.
True.
So,
fair.
Viggo Mortensen. Fair.
The two Muppet movies, the most recent one, the Jason Segel one, was good. The Muppets Most Wanted, not so good. The one season of the Office like mockumentary drama, you know, kind of style was good at times.
It was uneven.
Exactly. It was uneven. You know, like there was a weird subplot where Fozzie was dating a girl and her family wasn't accepting of her dating a bear. And then since then, we haven't had any real Muppet content until this. And I will say it's not like, if you ask me, like, it's not great, I'll be honest, but it's not awful. It's mostly good. Right. There are moments of shimmering moments of like, OK, yeah, this is fun and this is Muppets. There's still like the first episode had a whole, you know, Kermit interviews RuPaul and it was just RuPaul with Muppets, which is like whatever. Mm-hmm. But the Swedish Chef sketch is pretty funny. The Pepe game show sketch was pretty funny. I actually do love the framing device is Scooter is uploading the content to Disney Plus and you see his desktop and he's getting texts from Fozzie. Like they're bringing it into the modern time, but keeping a lot of the Muppet sight gags and humor and stuff like that to it. So I don't know, we're only a few episodes in. I love the Muppets. Any Muppets to me, like, I want Muppets in my life, so new content is welcome, but it's definitely, for whatever reason, it is hard to recreate the magic that they did in the 70s and 80s of the Muppets.
Henson's dead.
I know, exactly.
And it's not the 70s. Like, it's just
it's
a not different...
The it's a very of the 70s.
Yeah. But then, in addition to that, on a whim, we're like, what do you want to watch? I don't know. Let's watch this. We watched on Netflix that Speed Cubers... It's a documentary about competitive Rubik's Cube competition.
That so sounds like something you would watch.
But here's the thing. Okay, documentary, and I was like, all right, let's like 40 minutes, mm-hmm. right? Like not by no means was it like a full length movie, and it focused on these two kids. One kid is an Australian kid who's a superstar in the Rubik's Cube space, and then the other kid is a kid from California who is autistic and got super into using the Rubik's Cube and was a fan of the first kid and then worked his way up and then has beaten the first kid's world records, and now they're friends, but they keep beating each other's world records and beating each other in competitions. And these kids were just the sweetest, like the nicest kids you've ever seen. And it, like, I thought it was going to be one of those, oh, look at this weird, quirky, like competitive cultural thing, but it turned out to be like really, really, truly heartwarming and like, oh wow, there are good kids in the world, and like it was just super nice. So I don't know, it was.
Well, anytime you go into those subcultures, you know, there's always great stuff in there. The Spelling Bee documentary, the crossword puzzle documentary. I mean, there's always interesting things in those.
Yeah,
in those kind
that
of
Spelling Bee documentary was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it really was.
Well, who knows? What does a long time ago mean anymore?
Anything from 2005, I think.
The last thing I want to say isn't so much one that I watched, but one that I've watched many, many times, and now you can watch it again. One of the greatest movies from the 80s is now available in a new 4K DVD version and streaming.
I know where this is going.
Yes, it's a movie called Rad. They released it in 4K on Blu-ray and also on streaming again, so now you can see the cult classic of Rad, the best BMX bike movie in the 80s ever. It is now very easy to watch, and I strongly recommend. It's one of the greatest films of the 80s.
All right, so that's what we've been watching and enjoying since we last talked. But let's jump into the main event of this episode, which is Perry Mason. And I'm glad we're talking about it, because at first I think I was the only one watching it. Perry Mason is HBO's latest prestige drama, and for my money, when HBO's on it, it still produces the best prestige dramas on TV, at least for now, until AT&T runs it into the ground.
Over the last couple of years, there's been a bunch of times they've proved that, and I think, you know, The Watchmen was, oh, you know, and then this comes along. I think the only reason you watched it before me last time is I just hadn't gotten to it.
Well, also because I was a huge Perry Mason fan as a kid, so...
Yeah. You're the only one who was as a kid, by the way.
So we talked about it here on the show, and much like Mythic Quest, I gave it a shot and watched the entire season.
Mm-hmm. So Perry Mason just wrapped up recently. It was eight episodes. It's not a miniseries. Yeah. They're doing season two.
Eventually.
Originally developed by Robert Downey Jr., he was going to play Perry Mason.
Oh, thank God.
But then
he
had to drop out for scheduling reasons, and ended up being replaced by Matthew Rhys, the great actor from The Americans, and many other things. But Perry Mason was originally a TV series, 1957, 1966. It was originally a series of books.
Pulp novels.
Eric Stanley Gardner wrote.
They must have done, like, was it TV specials? Because I remember.
So there was the original black and white show, which you can watch on MeTV almost every day. Ran for 6 years, and then they did basically like 20 years of movies, like just like Columbo, mm-hmm. the same thing. So that's like, right. So all throughout the 80s and 90s, you had Raymond Burr coming back to play Perry Mason in TV movies, and I watched those also as a kid, so I was always a big Perry Mason fan, so I was very excited. Plus, I love Matthew Rhys from The Americans, so I was very excited for this miniseries, which is basically produced by the people behind Boardwalk Empire. Tim Van Patten directed all of your episodes of this miniseries. He was one of the directors. He's a big HBO guy, but he directed a lot of Boardwalk Empire. Yeah.
He came from, and a lot of those people came from The Sopranos.
And a lot of the cast, a lot of like the secondary, third cast members are from Boardwalk Empire, including our favorite.
Shea Whigham.
So good.
Every time he shows up on screen, I'm like, look at him. Look at his face.
He's gotten better as he's gotten skinnier.
Yeah.
The premise of the show is 1932, Perry Mason is an investigator for a lawyer played by John Lithgow, E.B. Jonathan. He has part of his crew that you're going to recognize from if you're a Perry Mason fan in place, but he's starts off as a PI for this lawyer investigating cases, and he has a partner played by Shea Whigham, Pete Strickland. They're both ex-cops. At the very least, Perry Mason's an ex-GI. He fought in World War I. He's got his demons from that. And they, you know, start off just investigating low-rent stuff, you know, basically a character like
Fatty Arbuckle,
yes.
They're investigating a Fatty Arbuckle-esque actor for infidelity, but it ends up getting drawn into a case involving a dead baby and a giant mega church in Los Angeles and how it all weaves together. By the end of it, Perry Mason has got his team together that you'll recognize. Della Street, his loyal assistant in the original show, is his secretary, but probably will end up being his co-lawyer on this series.
That's Mark Rylance's daughter.
She was very good.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Paul Drake, in this series, who is one of the earliest black cops in the LAPD, ends up having to quit and join their firm as their new investigator. And I thought this was great. I love period pieces. I find the 30s utterly fascinating right now.
Yeah. 1932 is a really interesting time to do a show, especially in LA.
Early LA as well is very fascinating.
Yeah, it's got that, you know, the LA Chinatown, Confidential, LA. The LA Confidential kind of feeling, although LA Confidential is a little later. Yeah, exactly. Like the glorious kind of, you know, Hollywood time. Yeah. But this show really brought you to that time and place in a way that I feel is different than any other thing that I've seen with it. You know, and it's very, you know, because it was early 30s, not late 30s. Yeah. And the difference between early 30s and late 30s is that, you know, Prohibition is still in effect, so that's kind of lingering.
The Depression's starting.
You still got old, shitty cars, you know, like you don't get those nice curved, you know, kind of LA noir kind of cars yet. It's still kind of very boxy, Model T.
Early generation cars.
Exactly, yeah.
In that same way, like the Depression has started, but it hasn't really kicked in that way yet. So it's not about just like soup lines and shit. But then I think one thing that really got me in that sense is that Perry has a flashback to war, and it's World War I. And I went, oh, man, I feel like we don't talk about those veterans and what they did after the fact very often. And you know, his story from World War I is gut-wrenching. Yeah, so I think that was really good in sort of in the time frame.
And also, it's like Chinatown. It's in LA. It's a lot of farmland. You know,
yeah.
It's not developed. It's LA took a long time and wasn't really settled as a city, probably more than 10 years before the show. And there's even a part where EB, who's much older, and talks about, you know, when he had his first law firm was next to the blacksmiths. You know, in the old West Town in like the late 1800s. Mm. And you're just like, oh, right. That's why I find it such interesting. It's like this interesting transitional time between like what we consider to be really old, like the old West versus modern times, which sort of begins like the 40s, 50s. And this is like that the 30s, late 20s, early 30s is like that weird transitional point where people are still riding horses. Mm-hmm. But there's also cars and there's planes. And anyway, I find it fascinating. But this is a great cast. Matthew Rhys, Juliet Rylance, as Josh said, Chris Chalk as Paul Drake, Shea Whigham, Tatiana Maslany, who plays Sister Alice, who's based on a real person, and John Lithgow, Nate Corddry.
He's so good.
It's just full of Stephen Root, Lily Taylor. Yeah. Oh.
Stephen Root is great as the district attorney.
Matt Frewer is a judge.
Lily Taylor is the mother of the church, you know, kind of zealot.
One of the other things that gets to happen, because I think because of the time frame, is that there are instances, and I think, you know, Stephen Root probably best evidences that, like, it's a little hammy. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but like, they get to chew the scenery and be a little melodramatic in a way that works because of this time frame. And it was really enjoyable. Like, every time Stephen Root said a word was really great. And then, you know, when Perry goes up against him, it's even better for that. So you just kind of, you know, it's a little in the past. You get to make it a little more like old Hollywood. I got to say, I'm going through a Matthew Rhys thing.
And well deserved, because after, for me, like, so I didn't watch The Americans, but the Mr. Rogers movie, I forgot to mention earlier, still watching a lot of Mr. Rogers.
good.
Currently right now, King Friday is making everybody do paintings of him because he likes to have pictures of him around him, around the castle. Yeah, sure. Totally, he's the king. But so that was really my first kind of exposure to him. And then in this, the dude is great.
He's incredible.
He's got such an emotional presence. Right, that you really, whatever, whether it's frustration or anger or whatever disappointment, like he is some way able to translate that in a way that I haven't seen an actor in a while, and it's really impressive.
What's great about this particular role here is I don't want to spoil The Americans for Josh, but he basically never gets to hit this level in The Americans. His character in The Americans is very constrained.
Yes,
and he has to be. So here, when he blows up, I'm like, oh shit, I've never seen Matthew Reese yell before.
Yeah, so what happens is as we start watching this, and I had seen, I'm aware of The Americans. I tried to watch it at one point and didn't get very far. And I'd seen Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and
he was in the post.
I noticed
as well,
him. I was like, oh, I kind of noticed that. He was in like a really great episode of Girls. And I kind of noticed him, but didn't quite. And then right when Perry Mason started, I was watching. I was like, this is pretty good. And then I heard A Fresh Air, where he was on with Terry Gross, and he's Welsh. Yep. And I know that or whatever, but to hear him in his real self,
he's a goofball.
He's such a different person. Yeah. So then you come into Perry Mason, and I was like, holy shit, he is owning that character in that space in a way that...
He's not an actor that plays himself. He's an actor.
It's funny how that works. Huh?
So we started watching The Americans. We went back and started to watch through it again. And he's really good in that, and he gets to do a bunch of different things, and you know, they get in his disguises, so there's all sorts of different people. And then we go back to, I don't want to say, I was like two or three episodes into Perry Mason, and I start watching. I think we went right from watching An Americans to the new Perry Mason episode that came out that night. And he walks on screen, and I went, oh my God. Because he looks exactly the same, but he was a completely different person. And I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's not even a thing that I can describe how he talks or whatever. Like, his bearing is just a different person, and it's the weirdest, most subtle thing, and I'm way into it right now.
It's interesting because he's not your traditional leading man. Like, he's a good looking guy for sure, but he's not your traditional like square jawed guy. He's also he's like hair's thinning, but he has this presence that is you can't take your eyes off him. And he's
Connor, you
so
said something to me like he becomes a sad, you know, like inner turmoil character better than anybody else for a person who doesn't seem like that at all in real life.
And there's a ton of that in this series.
He's very good at being sad. I defy you to find anyone better than him at playing a sad character. But what was great about this is, you know, it starts off it's parallel storytelling, right? So you're following the case of the kidnapped. It's not exactly the Lindbergh case, but it's got a lot of echoes of the Lindbergh case where a baby's kidnapped and ransomed. The baby accidentally dies in the kidnapping. And that's the main thrust. But then you've got this strange megachurch story going on to the side. And I remember telling Josh, because I didn't know Ron was watching, I was like, they need to figure out this church story. Like, they need to incorporate this pretty soon. And then it all comes crashing together towards the end.
No, it's so funny you say that, because me and my wife were watching it. I want to say we were like maybe three episodes in. I turned to her. I'm like, you know, I'm like, I know the case is about the dead baby, but I think it's really about the church. So
it was just really well done. I liked the 8-episode length. It was great. It wasn't like they had to stretch it out. Occasionally with these like 13-episode, 26-episode seasons, you're like, well, that was a good episode, but really, did we need it? This is like all on point.
I will tell you something. There's one thing that stuck out to me, but I'm not upset about it, was that I'm going to say this because whatever. Perry Mason's a lawyer.
Yep.
And
right.
I was about halfway through and I was like, wait, he's not a lawyer. He's a private detective.
Well,
and then at the very end of one of the episodes, like a thing takes place, and then the rest of the show, he's a full-on lawyer.
It's fast
and
forward.
They wasted no time with that, and I was 100% okay with it.
Yes.
It was almost head spinning how quick he was able to become a lawyer. And part of that is the time.
30s.
The 30s, anything goes, you know, that sort of thing. But like, they blew he just took the bar and had no problem with it. And like,
but it's not only that, but like, I think he stumbled a little at the beginning of court, but an episode later, he's a killer in that courtroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he's yelling,
he's
confident.
He's very good, but he still doesn't quite know all the rules. And I mean, I don't want to spoil how the trial goes, but he doesn't, you know, he's not. What I liked about that final episode was, so on the TV show, Perry won, I think, every case but one. Mm-hmm. Always up against Hamilton Berger, who was played in this show by Justin Kirk from Weeds.
He's awesome.
Oh, he's always great. But his specialty was to harangue the guilty party on the stand until they confessed, or present them with some miracle evidence at the very last second. And so you're watching the last episode, and that's what's happening. And I was like, wow, they're just going to go for it. And then there's a great reversal on that.
Yep.
This doesn't work in court. You can't actually get someone to confess.
No one confesses on the stand. And yeah.
And so I was like, that's a nice way to sort of acknowledge the roots of Perry Mason, but to go in a different direction. And yeah. I thought that was really great. It just was really just a really smart show.
What's interesting about this is because I remember when it first came out, I was telling after you guys had talked about it, I mentioned to my wife, it's like, really? They remade Perry Mason? And it was so long ago. You know, for the, I mean, what's
60s? Yeah, it ended in the 60s.
Yeah, so 50s and 60s, nearly 60 years ago, right? So there's not so much cultural relevance to it.
The movies went to the 90s, but still.
Yeah, but still, other than, you know, Raymond Burr, I couldn't tell you anything about the show. You watched it, but I didn't. I knew it existed, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, Connor knew a lot more about it than I did.
Yeah, and knowing that it was rooted in pulp novels, not just like the old TV show was based on these pulp novels, so it's got even a richer history than I even realized. And being able to take that in the time period and then tell, and Connor, I don't know you if you watched every episode, you know, but they never got into his origin story, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't remember every episode. It was mostly just about him being in court.
Because I remember watching the first episode, I'm like, he's an investigator. I thought he's a lawyer, right? Yeah. And this was a really kind of fun adventure to go on. And honestly, now I'm like, COVID aside, but I'm like, oh man, like this was the getting the band together. Like now it's really going to start. What's going to happen next season?
And I was watching at the end of the, I want to say the second to last episode when they're outside and there's huge crowds. And it occurred to me, I was like, oh, we're not going to get to shoot this for a while. Because it was just like massive crowds of people.
Let's not dwell.
I know. No, I just mean like you. Same thing. Like they just got the band together. I was like, oh, this can keep going. It occurred to me, and I got really excited about that. And then I thought that's going to be a little while. Pace yourself, buddy.
Yeah. And it can keep going and tell different kind of stories. I mean, what sure. was interesting was in the original show, Paul Drake is your blonde, square jawed, waspy guy, and here he's a black character, and it allows for a whole different kind of storytelling. And at first, I thought, well, they're kind of pushing the boundaries of credulity here, because how effective can a black investigator be in the 30s? But then there's a great sequence where he does some investigating for Perry, and you see how he can exist on the margins of society at the time and use that to his advantage. And I thought that was really well done. And plus, they add the element of Della being a closeted lesbian, and that was a new twist, and that allows for different things. There was a lot of interesting things.
Gloves. I do gotta say, yeah, Della's girlfriend. Every scene she was in, she stole the show. I thought she mm-hmm. that was a great, and we got just enough of her. Like it was, yes. And I thought they revealed that relationship in a great way, mm-hmm. and it was used within the story, as an element that was really strong. But that actor, when she was answering the phone, and when she did her moment of delivering the evidence in court, like every time she was on, I'm like, she's delightful.
She got spunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great courtroom drama. It was a great mystery. There was a lot of interest. It tied into historical elements of not just the country, but L.A. It was, I thought it was good.
Good twists and turns. It was good. I mean, like good courtroom drama. Good, like and it was just so well done. And we joked about length of TV shows, and with the 30 minutes being the optimal to get in, get out. But like these hour long shows on primarily on HBO. Connor, to your point that the premiere TV on HBO. Going back to like I talked about it when I talked about Boardwalk Empire. When I love that, like it's like getting lost in a movie that's 1 hour long. And it's so funny because I started late, so we were a couple of we were a few weeks behind, and we were, I do like to, I'm not a big binger. I've said it before. We like to, we watch an episode, try to wait a week or at least wait a few days to let it linger, to discuss and build up excitement. But we finished, I think, the third to last episode, and we're like, we're gonna watch the next one tomorrow, right? And like, yeah, because we just like, it was on the edge where we just wanted to see how it all turns out.
Like, we always watched it on Sunday night, which is nice. Not a, like it would like we like, oh, the new one's,
it's Perry Mason night. Like, I got so excited when I saw it was time for Perry Mason.
I mean, we've talked about this before. Connor's much more, and he still does TV much more traditionally than I do, and I don't want everything to be like that, but for certain things, like that Sunday night prestige show thing, that's great. I love it, it's so much fun.
So we can look forward to season 2 of Perry Mason in 2025. At some point, this show may get into talking about how there's no more TV, and Ron will be correct. And
there's nothing to watch. Nothing to watch.
We'll get into that.
I really should adjust that. There's nothing good to watch. That's nothing that I want to watch. That's the qualifier.
No, there's nothing that you think you want to watch.
This is a great segue, Ron. So what I thought we'd do this week was... We do a grab bag segment. I come up with a bunch of questions for you guys. You guys don't know what's coming. They're all related to media. And I thought I'd just pepper you with some questions and we fill the last 10 or 15 minutes of the show.
Two things I love when podcasting. One, a good grab bag segment. And two, not knowing what's coming.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Connor's good at these.
Yeah.
On the Goodfellas Minute, he came up with the fun fact out of nowhere. Didn't tell us, just started doing it, and it became a highlight of every episode. So he's good at this.
Here's your first question related to what Ron just said. What one TV series would you most want to make the other one watch?
Ooh.
If you could force Josh to watch a series and he has to watch the whole thing.
My answer is already, I've already got it.
I feel like I know what Josh's is, but I'm curious what Ron's is. Why don't you go, Josh, and let Ron think about it?
I have qualifying questions, but Josh can go first. Wait, I can guess what Josh is.
What am I going to say?
Is it something that I think he would enjoy?
No, it's not a hate watch.
It's not a hate watch. Right, you're going to really hate watching Beverly Hills 90210. But what show that he hasn't watched or won't watch that you most wish he would watch that you could make him watch?
Oh, man. It's a great question.
Josh, you can start. I know what your answer is.
It's Friday Night Lights.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
I thought you were going to say The Wire.
I thought you were going to say Fargo.
I think Fargo is fantastic. It's a really good show, and I think that he's not watching it because he doesn't think he will like it in the same way that he isn't watching Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights is
football.
Exactly, which is stupid. I don't like boxing, but Rocky's a great movie. The point being, though, it is the best teen drama I've maybe ever seen. And you love that shit and you would love it. I have zero doubt in my mind that you would love watching that show and you would come back and be like, I can't believe fucking Riggins did that. And it's just a simple fact. The football has nothing to do with it. The prosecution rests.
Wow. This is hard.
You may not have an answer. Maybe go with your gut.
Well, because also I will give Josh credit that he has been much, well, also because you watch more TV than I do, but has been way more open to trying things that we've suggested and finding the joy in them and all this sort of stuff. Like, because I feel like there's a point in time where I could have said Halt and Catch Fire, but then you watch Halt and Catch Fire and you got it and you liked it, you know? So
fucking good.
So good, right? So good.
It's the best character drama of that decade.
Yeah, so good. I mean, without getting a full catalog of everything that you've watched, I got to lean on what I think you probably have never watched and would never watch, and I'll go with, you know, a favorite of me and Connor, and that's Twin Peaks.
I was realizing you were getting to that.
Yeah.
I feel like he would hate it, but I think he would find things that would appreciate in it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I will amend it. Yes, I hope that would be the case, that you would find things that you like that. But I also amend it and throw The Good Wife at him.
I could see that. Although I did try it at one point. It was a little, in my experience, it was a little too standard. It felt a little too standard network drama to me.
Be careful.
It's the most morally ambiguous network television show in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
The best guest cast of any show, maybe.
I feel like I've gotten in early. If I'd gotten in early, I would have been okay with it now, but seems too daunting. Because it's like old school network 26 episode seasons, right? Like it is
long.
It's a whole thing.
Yes.
I mean, but it's funny because you guys were both big ER fans, and I didn't watch it until much later.
That's right.
Which was now a while ago also. But I did catch up while it was still on air.
You set the tone, Josh.
I know.
Let's switch.
I'm sorry. If I had an answer for both of you right now, and I've been mentioning this lately, but for both of you, it's The Nick, which you can kind of only watch on Cinemax. It's ER 1900, New York. And like, there's literally you set the tone moment, and I was like, oh my God. And it's the best 5-0 I've ever seen.
Want to watch it. It's just very hard to watch.
It isn't. You just go to Amazon, and you get their Cinemax trial that gives you a week. You pay $10 for the extra month if you need it. And
I don't have
done
a week.
It's two seasons.
Let's switch gears here to a subject that you both love. Tell us your first live show and the last live show you went to.
Live music show?
What was your first live music show? What was the last one you went to?
Shit.
You don't know those?
Hard to remember.
The last would be the easiest one, I would think.
No, that's the hardest one. I don't remember what the last one was.
He's got little babies.
Yeah, so seriously.
They're not little anymore.
Oh, they're little. Man, they're the little people now. It's really freaky.
They didn't get easier. He's not like he's rested now.
I got to go and look at my calendar. Hang on.
What was the first one?
While you think. Yeah, what's your first show?
Well, depend. This is a tough question for me because the first one was when I was like eight, and I tagged along with my dad and my sister to Nassau Coliseum. My dad was taking my sister to go see Power Station, which was a band that featured members of Duran Duran and Robert Palmer and all this sort of stuff. So like,
he brings up a good point: is that any respectable music interview will ask, "What's your first show?" And there's always two answers to that: is the first one you saw, and then the first one that meant anything to you.
Well exactly. I would say the first one you chose to go to on your own, as opposed to like you went with your parents or something.
Oh man. Well, yeah. So the first one in my, So I will break it up in this because my friends in high school were in bands that then got involved in the local music scene. I can't remember my first show that was like a hardcore show and that sort of thing. Because actually I do remember it. It was at the Right Track Inn. It was my friend's band was in a band called Time Alone, and he played with a band called Clockwise at the Right Track Inn. But those are all like local scene stuff. But then the first time I went to the city was to see Suede at the Academy. Me and my friend got on the train after school. It was a Friday night, and we went to see them play at the Academy. There's a Britpop band that I discovered in 120 minutes, and it was just an amazing night in the city. And we met girls at the show, and then took the train home with them. And you know, and I caught a flower from the singer from this. Brought the flower home. It was a Britpop thing. And then with the way the trains went on Long Island and everything, this is the night before the PSATs, and I got in at like 3 a.m. or something like that, and I just fell asleep. And this is 1992-93 maybe, so I reeked of smoke because all the clubs you could still smoke in. And I woke, the test was at 7 a.m or 7:30 or whatever, so I just got up. I fell asleep in the clothes I went to the show in, and I got up and went to school in the clothes I went to the show in. Mm-hmm. And so I reeked of cigarettes, and then I fell asleep in the middle of the test, and and let's just say I got a very low grade, which then prompted an argument with my mother about what the P in PSAT stood for. And my argument that it stood for practice, and so therefore it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. It did not matter in any way. You were right about that one.
Yeah, I was.
I was also up all night the day before my PSAT. Not for any real reason, just I was with people and we were hanging out. But
interesting.
Yeah. But I was fully aware. I was like, well, this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you know your last show?
My last show...
Was it...
Most recent show, I should say.
I'm going through my calendar now to try to find it.
Avail was too early. That was 4 or 5 months before.
No, that was in September. That was last year.
That's what I mean. So,
yeah. Oh man, I don't know.
Well, Josh, well, on looks, why don't you?
Yeah, my first show, like my first show on my own as like a teenager was. I have a college in my town. Bowdoin College was there, so they started to realize they had shows. So, but at that point, they brought in Digable Planets first. That was the first thing. I was like, oh, I've heard of that on MTV. I can go to that. With the Cool Like That single.
It's Cool Like That.
And it was cool. It wasn't really my like favorite thing, but it was all right. It was cool, you know, like that. And then after that, I think they had Arrested Development kind of come in after that. So
did you ever go to anything with your mom?
I don't think
did you ever
so. Go to my like mom and my tastes have always not been the same, even for a while. And I don't know. That wasn't a thing. So that would have been like my junior year of high school. And then my senior year of high school, Dinosaur Jr. played in Portland. And we could finally drive at that point. Portland's like the city in Maine. And it's like 25 minutes from where I lived. And so like we got in a car and drove to a real rock show. You know, it was kind of, they were a major label band at the time. But kind of everybody became a major label band for a little while at that time. You know, but they're an indie rock band. It was my first like rock show. Yeah, I'm obviously still a huge fan of that band today, if not more so. That was really fun. That was like the first show that had like moshing and like, you know, crowd surfing and sort of the thing that was going on at the time. Just loud.
Your most recent show?
I saw Silver Sun Pickups in Boston about 5 days before all the lockdown started, which in retrospect.
You're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, I really am. It wasn't a great show. I really like those albums. They're not a very punk rock band as opposed to a lot of stuff I go see, but I actually really like their albums. I mean, I had to play a couple songs from in a band that I was in, and I sort of got into them to a certain extent. But when I went to the show, it was at the House of Blues, which I don't really like in Boston, and the crowd was very much not the scene I'm used to. It's like, you know, normal people who go to shows as opposed to like the shows I usually go to, which is like a bunch of people my age with beards who stand there and quietly enjoy the music, even though they're like loud, you know, people in the shows. But it's just a different scene. But, you know, they were pretty good. It was just one of those like really polished, and I kind of wanted to have seen it, but it wasn't like a super special show.
Ron, you figured it out?
I'm going back in my text with my friend who I go to shows with, and I could see that between March and now November, I did not go to see Gorilla Biscuits in February because I was tired and the babies. I did not go with him to see Bob Mould because of the babies. I did not go with him to see Superchunk Acoustic.
It's like a Sam I Am story.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not go to the band Sam I Am.
That's why I said I think Avail might have been it, because that was September, October.
No, I think I went to Vitus at some point to see somebody at Vitus. Let's see. I have a ticket. Now that's for pinball. I'm trying to look at my tickets folder. I don't know, maybe
5 minutes.
I know. I'm trying to figure it out.
You should
man.
Be on top of this. This is your brand.
You should use Bands in Town, and that way you can just look and see what the last one was.
All right. So hang on. So it looks like it is. It looks like it was on September 7th. That might have been Avail.
I know.
Yeah. It was. Yeah.
I mean, see, the thing is, though, if you're going to go out on a show.
Wow, that's almost a year ago, Ron.
I don't think that's true, though, because I know for a fact I went to St. Vitus sooner than that. So, But I don't buy tickets. I just walk in there, so I don't have you know that sort of thing. But I'm fairly certain. Oh wait, I can look at my Instagram, Connor. These are tough questions, man.
What was the last? What's your answer to these?
Yeah,
the questioner doesn't answer the questions.
The
questionee answers the questions.
I feel like whatever your first one was is going to be A, surprising and not surprising.
I don't remember, so here's what happened. A couple years ago, you guys remember, I went to see Willie Nelson's 4th of July picnic.
I found it. Sorry.
Real quick, so I went to see that, and then I was having lunch with my uncle, and my uncle and aunt live in Austin the next day, and we were talking about the show, and I was saying how excited I was to finally see Willie Nelson. He was like, what are you talking about? You saw Willie Nelson in like the 80s with your parents and me, and and somewhere at some point in Texas, probably in Austin, I saw Willie Nelson play. Was that the first show I ever went to? I don't know. My parents were young, so they probably took me to those kind of outdoor concert things. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what they were because I was a baby or a kid or whatever.
That doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count. But I don't really go to shows a lot. I don't even remember what the last one was. I actually had a bunch of tickets this year. I can't remember. I had at least two shows that we had bought tickets for this year that were canceled. And I can't remember what they were.
I was supposed to see the Decemberists about 5 days from now, and I bought like the best tickets you could get, like front and middle. My wife was super excited, and I remember back in March, she's like, maybe we can still go, and then by April, it's like, we're totally not going.
I found it thanks to, I always take a picture of a band I see on Instagram, and it was on November 1st, 2019, I saw the band 108 at St. Vitus. That was my last show.
It's the sacred number of Vishnu.
Exactly, sacred number of Vishnu, 108.
So that was the grab bag segment. We may bring it back.
Oh, that's it?
Well, we're out of time, but I spent a whole couple hours writing questions down the other day, so I've got a ton of them.
Oh, great. We can't burn through them all.
We got to spread them out. So that was the grab bag segment. This was iFanboy Media Explode. Again, unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. If you want to support us, that's where you can go. And also, if you want to send us an email, we can do emails on this show too. contact@ifanboy.com.
Oh, that'd be great.
If you want to
put Media Explode in the...
Put Media Explode in the subject line, we'd love to do emails on the show as well. We don't just talk about comics, but we do at ifanboy.com. We have our weekly Pick of the Week show. Josh and I talk about the week's comics. We have fun. There's tons of stuff happening there in our community, and we thank everyone who comes and listens to the show, supports the show. We thank you, and we had a good time. This is always fun.
It's always fun.
And if I could promote my own crap, if you like technology, specifically Android phones, go listen to All About Android. It's the other podcast that I co-host. Every Tuesday comes out on the Twit Network. So give that a download, please.
All right. And until next month, we'll be back talking about something. Who knows what it'll be. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. Thanks, everyone.